Hello, lovely podcast people. Welcome to another creatine episode. This episode, I want to talk. Probably, I've left it until the fourth episode, is this? Well, no, I don't know why. I guess it's just not as interesting for me at the minute. So it just took me a bit longer to get around to being motivated to recording this. So apologies if you've been waiting for this one. This one I'm going to tackle with sports performance, as it were. But there's more in here. If you, you know, even if you are not an athlete, there's stuff to do with training. If you are someone who exercises, if you've taken up CrossFit for community and health benefits, you know, if you're doing exercise even for health and you want to just get the most out of that training, if you get injured, etc., etc., there's stuff in here for you. So without further ado, just a reminder based on other episodes that I'm going to talk about the exact strategies and dosing and brand, etc., in a later episode. I feel like there's going to be 6 or 7 episodes now, but I'm going to fire them out. I'm going to try and record 2 more in the next 2 days for sure, and then I will get them out. You know, I'm not going to make you wait. If you're an avid listener, you hear me talking about creatine, and then you're like, right, I've got these questions, answer them right now. I'm not going to wait you make a whole week to prolong the episodes. That's never been the point, that this would be an exactly weekly podcast. So I will try and get the next 3 out in much less than 3 weeks. Anyway, without further ado, team sports. The kind of historical, I've actually been interviewed for Insider. I don't really know what Insider is, but as I understand it, it's just this big magazine, online magazine, media publication thingamajigger about creatine recently, which is quite funny. Not off the back of my podcast, which is annoying. That's what I want, you know, for the flipping Daily Mail to reach out to me and go, we want to talk about to you about evidence-based nutrition because we've heard these podcasts, so that they actually get some factual information out for once instead of rubbish. Oops, got my laptop in the background. I've written down a couple of listener questions that go well with this episode. So I've got my laptop here, so you're getting an extra special episode where I have these things that I can read out. So I was interviewed about creatine recently, and this is one of the things I said was, you know, historically, they kind of said, what's creatine for? And it was a bit of that thing, not understanding. And my response was, creatine is one of the most versatile supplements ever discovered. And I think I said, barring maybe just vitamins and minerals, you know, vitamin C, for instance, is hugely versatile in that it can help young and old, male and female, healthy and unhealthy. Even, you know, links to athletes using it, the extremes of sport, etc., clinical and just general health. You know, not necessarily supplementation, but at the same time, if someone isn't getting enough from diet, the supplementation of it is going to have these profound effects, and it's hugely versatile. Now, creatine is much the same, as you're hopefully getting from my podcast, young and old. Even before you're born, creatine is being kind of looked at as a potential. You know, if a baby's going to be born preterm, creatine as a supplement might be something that's a natural aid that will help that baby be healthy. You know, that's a hugely, it's an amazing thing. Anyway, so I think actually I'll talk a bit more about breastfeeding and pregnancy and some of this other stuff in your listener question ones, because loads of you have asked those questions. Anyway, where was I? Historically, creatine was the high-intensity interval training supplement. That's what it was discovered for. Repeated sprint exercise clearly benefited. And when I do how to take it, I'll probably talk about what it does, I suppose. But just to recap, some of you who are aware of creatine, but for those of you who've got no idea, creatine is stored in the body as phosphocreatine. That's the main store of it in your muscle. And as I have mentioned in the Cognition podcast, it's in your brain as well. And phosphocreatine, I don't want to get too sciencey or into too much biochemistry, but it helps your body make energy. It's the most simple thing I can say. ATP, adenosine triphosphate, ATP is this, if you think about, I just thought about, someone could do a good analogy about Bitcoin and this kind of cryptocurrency. It's like the currency of wealth within the internet age, although no one really understands it, so it's probably not a good thing to use as currency yet. But your body, the currency of energy, is this thing ATP. And so when you take creatine, you increase phosphocreatine levels, and phosphocreatine helps you make ATP. So adenosine triphosphate, phosphocreatine. So phosphocreatine can donate some of that phospho towards the process of making adenosine triphosphate. From what's called ADP, adenosine diphosphate. So you have two phosphates and you add a phosphate from your creatine phosphate to make adenosine triphosphate. Anyway, I said I wasn't going to get too technical. I feel like I've explained that well. I probably should one day have someone clever like Lucy create a little flying imagery that the ATP is built from ADP. But anyway, for now, you've just got that. But ATP can be used everywhere. It can be used in your brain, in your gut, in your muscles. And so what I'm getting at here is when you've got more phosphocreatine, you've got what's called the phosphocreatine energy system. And it helps you to recycle that ATP. You've got enough ATP stored in your muscle at any one time for really just a super, super strong muscle contraction. And then it's gone. But you recycle it so fast with this phosphocreatine system. And then after that, you've got your anaerobic system. That's when you produce the lactate and you get the deep, deep burn. I don't know if you know, I just did over 1,000. Name the film. It's a deep burn. And all these different ways, you know, then you've got your aerobic energy systems, which can also help us create ATP. But phosphocreatine helps us make it super, super fast. So when we first discovered, I say we, I was nothing to do with it, we, the academic community, which I'm also not part of, Okay, when them, the clever people, discovered it, it was fairly obvious where to initially research what it might be useful for. And so then it was these repeated sprint things, and likewise in the gym, you know, doing something that lasts not ages, like running a marathon or, you know, running 5K even, but something that is exercise. Why does my brain go here? I was about to say something just lasts for a matter of seconds. And then I was going to go, I can think of something like that. I hope some of you are out doing like a really horrible, not that I want it to be horrible, but you're doing like some steps on a really rainy day when you listen to this, and that makes you smile in the rain. Anyway, so now I'm just thinking, I wonder if anyone will ever do this study. You know, will it help me last longer in the gym with my repetitions? So it does, you know, we can, it increases repetitions on the bench press. But what it helps us do, let me give you an example of a study. Running repeated sprints. So you might say that it's sprint for 15 meters as fast as you can, and now rest for 10 seconds. And now sprint again, and then rest for 10 seconds, and sprint again. You do that over and over again. And you do that with and without creatine. And these are the studies that have been done. I'll link you to a study that just uses a protocol roughly like this. And they do all sorts of different things. You know, they'll then do longer, more kind of speed endurance type training sessions. And creatine, then the benefits of it seem to fall away. So But I will actually, I'm going to talk in this one. I'm still struggling to talk about team sports here or get it over and done with. But I'm going to talk about some possible areas within purist endurance training type stuff, you know, like rowing and cycling for ages in the heat, where creatine has actually shown some really interesting benefits. But anyway, so this realm, you know, do 10 repetitions of bench press and then have your rest and then go again. And it's in these type of repeated high intensity things where creatine really comes into its own, and just unequivocally almost over 40-ish years of research just time and time again, which is why we have creatine as one of the most researched and well proven supplements. Efficacious ergogenic aids. So we, you know, and then you get studies where, and this is just maybe for some of you who are a bit more geeky, when you've got these, what's the word, ivory tower / artificial setup tests versus, so there's something called the Loughborough, I don't know what it's called, what a muppet, I've not read this for literally 15 or more years, so I've forgotten what it's called, but it's something called like the Loughborough intermittent sprint football simulation test, something or other. Anyway, they basically came up with this really, really fancy test that's simulated. Do you know what? I'm going to try and Google. I haven't got any windows open. I'm going to Google what it's called because I've gone there and it might be interesting. Loughborough football. It's not simulation. Sprint test, something or other. Loughborough intermittent shuttle test list. There you go. So it's a field test that simulates the activity, something or other. Anyway, it basically, you know, it's simulating the types of exercise you might do in something like football. And all other sports in this, you know, rugby, like tennis, all these kind of things are likely to benefit. Now, the point I was trying to make is when you then get into a football match, into a rugby match, into things that become much more specific, it becomes more difficult to eke out the exact benefits because there's other factors at play. But we can extrapolate that, yes, if you are able to, on your 10th repetitive sprint between maybe chasing a ball down with intermittent periods of walking and jogging, that you will get to the ball quick and you might make that one dramatic tackle or whatever. So there you go. I shall continue. So I think in terms of team sports, you know, someone did ask, I'm just having a quick look here, are there any benefits for football players? How many grams per kilogram should I be taking? So the answer is yes. And go to the dosing episode, which will be, as I said, probably episode 6-ish, where I'm going to go into all the detail, be really specific, so you guys can go and listen to that and help yourselves. And also, this was a question, any evidence of being more vulnerable to injuries after taking it? So I just want to mention on this, again, the other episodes will go into some of this. You know, am I more likely to cramp is one of the listener questions. So I'm going to save that for the listener questions episode. Am I, compartment syndrome is something that some people feel when they take creatine because of the muscle swelling effect. But you're not, anyway, I'll answer that more in that episode. I'm not going to go off on one there. I'm going to just quickly talk about an interesting study that, again, when I talk about performance, and this is performance sport, but it's also just going back to that cognition thing. We know that choice reaction time was improved after sleep deprivation with creatine, so in the brain function episode. But I kept this study for here, where they had rugby players do 10 passing sessions where they measured their accuracy of their passing, etc., on their dominant and non-dominant side. And really cool, on 5 of the occasions, they let them have adequate sleep from 7 to 9 hours. And then on five of the occasions, they restricted them to 3 to 5 hours sleep. And so, again, it's just very interesting. And in this study, just thinking about it, they used caffeine and creatine. So I think there was 4, maybe 5 arms to the study where they had like 50 milligrams per kilogram creatine, 100 milligrams per kilogram creatine, yep, 1 milligram per kilogram caffeine, or 1 or 5 milligrams per kilogram caffeine. I'm actually impressed with myself that I remembered those methods. And they found no difference between creatine and caffeine. And what they found was that when using, and what's interesting as well, 1 milligram per kilogram, I'm just going to put this into real terms for you guys. 1 milligram per kilogram of caffeine is, if you weigh 80 kilograms or 60 kilograms, I'm going to use, is 60 milligrams of caffeine, which is a weak-ish coffee, medium. And a super strong coffee would be more. And again, it depends on volume of coffee and how many shots. You know, if you go into Costa and getting a massive grande whatever or a venti, you know, that you got a big, I think a large Costa is what they, Costa, they use one of the strongest coffee beans or something. It's like 250 milligrams. So it's not a lot of coffee. Maybe a couple of cups of tea. It's less than half a can of Monster. And it was having as much effect as 5 times the amount of caffeine. And then we got this 100 milligrams per kilogram of creatine. So again, that's like 8 grams of creatine if you're 80 kilos, 6 grams if you're whatever. And then the 50 version, 50 milligrams per kilogram. So if you're 60 kilos, it's only 3 grams of creatine. So it's not a lot. And what they found acutely was that throwing accuracy, and I think on non-dominant and dominant sides, they, with sleep deprivation in the placebo group, they got worse, as you would imagine. But with these 4 different groups, no difference between groups, they all were able to maintain their accuracy. So it's just super, super interesting. So again, if you're I'm just thinking all these different sports, all these different life things. You know, you're sleep deprived and you're driving a car fast. Your accuracy, your reaction, choice reaction speed, all these things. You just sort of think, geez, is there anything creatine can't do? Creatine might actually be able to create world peace. it does. The reason I say that is just even just saying this stuff out loud, I'm like, flipping heck. It's quite a cool thing, isn't it? That we have this supplement we discovered and it does have these profound effects, and it's not really discussed that much. You know, I'm still amazed, and even I've gone through years of my life since, you know, I learned about creatine 17 years ago or something, and there's been many years of my life where I just haven't taken it for a year just because I've been lazy and whatever. So I sort of hope, again, in terms of inspiring people, I may not be inspiring people into a career in nutrition or inspiring people in many other ways, but just, I want to inspire people who know that creatine is good, but they've just got a bit lax with taking it. Just maybe start taking it again. Okay, so that was the sleep deprivation. So I'm just, my next topic is creatine and endurance performance. Now, it's much, much harder to understand. Oh, and I've just thought, you know what? I will, I don't know why this just popped into my head. Creatine increases muscle glycogen storage. So one of the things I'm not going to talk about in a great deal in this podcast is weight making sport performance in combat sports and anything like that. But again, it's just creatine's going to help from a performance perspective in a, you know, okay, weightlifting. It's unlikely to help directly you know, unless you're trying to do, muscle hypertrophy, great, take creatine. Recovery from training, great, creatine. There might be very, very, very small benefits for kind of, you know, high-level weightlifters, but less good weightlifters might find that benefit. But again, you go to Olympic weightlifting, there's so much technique involved, but, you know, in terms of muscle contraction, creatine is just, it's there and it's doing a great job and causing intracellular water increases, cell volumization and strength, etc. But in something with bouts of very, very high intensity grappling and this, that, and the other, yes, creatine, again, amazing. And I'm going to talk a bit about that. No, sorry, I'm not going to talk loads about that. I've gone off topic, haven't I? Okay, I'll come back to endurance, sorry. With weight-making sports, the key thing to remember is there can be an increase in body weight with creatine supplementation. And generally, if creatine is not leading to an increase in body water, good body water, positive body water, one of the listener questions in a later episode that I'll probably cover is this idea, how long does it take for the water? I don't know why I'm putting on that voice. But it just, the reason I'm saying this is just because I don't want to take the mickey. And so that is wrong of me. Let me apologize. It annoys me because I think of these supplement companies that lie and go, and you know, I can do the voice about them. Take our creatine. It won't make you increase body water. It won't increase weight. That's because it doesn't work, you gimp. The whole point. You know, all of these studies, some of them even look at the individuals in the studies who increase intracellular water, body water, the most. They get the most water retention. Water retention has this horrible negative connotation. Water retention, in this perspective, is fantastic. That's why it works. If it doesn't do that, it's not working for you, and you're unlucky, mate. So ignore the people who say that. You want it, and it will not dissipate. You know, when I start taking creatine, I get all bloated and puffy and watery. No, you don't. That doesn't happen. That's not a thing. Again, I'm going to talk about this in another episode. But when you're taking it, if it increases body water, that's a good thing. And it won't go away unless you stop taking the creatine, and then you lose all the benefits from the creatine. But it's, you know, and it's more often than not females who have this thing of, okay, menstrual cycle related water retention, which they don't particularly like. Which is fine, but that's not what creatine is doing to you. It's not the same as that. This is intracellular water that is helping our muscles in a good way. So it may increase body weight slightly. Again, if that's making you feel worse as a human, this is your chance to go, I need to stop being so interested and obsessed with the scales and having my self-worth or how I look or anything related to scales, because it's irrelevant. You know, you see these people post up, here's me at 70 kilograms, here's me at 70 kilograms again, and they look totally different. You're not chasing a number on the scale. You should never be. You can use it to track progress, for instance, but the point is an A to a B, not I took creatine, my body weight went up 2 kilograms. I know why that is. It's a positive. Now I'm tracking it moving from this new line in the sand. So where was I? Weight making sports. You then have to weigh up how you feel using creatine. Does it give you this performance boost? Does it help you in training and then you can come off it for a competition? But we know, I don't know if I am... Yeah, someone did write, should I come off creatine when close to competing? And there's no right or wrong answer. Maybe, maybe not. Do you struggle to get into your weight category? The only reason you would come off it is because you know that your weight increased by a kilogram, maybe 2 kilograms, whatever, when you started taking it. And you are 2 kilograms over and you can't lose some body fat, which is probably not hugely beneficial to your performance. And the reason I said probably is just because of combat sports and, you know, maybe what adipose tissue might help with. So your question can be answered by this fact, that it takes roughly 30 days for creatine levels to go from your supplemented levels back to baseline if you've... you've saturated your muscles. So there you go. If you are struggling to make weight, you need to consider cutting out 30 days before if you want it all out. You know, you can cut it out for 2 weeks. It won't all be gone, but it will help a little bit, et cetera, et cetera. So you need to, you know, speak to a practitioner, someone who can help you maybe to work out the best strategy. But there are obviously other ways for making weight if you're in one of those sports. Healthy ways. Stay away from the unhealthy ways. Right. And so, yeah, my other thing was just this, creatine can help when taken with carbohydrate to increase muscle glycogen stores. Again, depending on what sport you're in, how long you have to after making weight, and then rehydrating if you need to, carbing up if you need to, whatever. It's just something that can be used there. It's difficult to say, you know, the reason that popped into my head, because I started talking about endurance performance, and then it's kind of like, well, if you weigh more and you are running, that is a very hard sell that, okay, weighing 1 or 2 kilograms more, but I've got a little bit more glycogen, which realistically I can restore, or I can at least feed with exogenous outside of the body glucose, you know, sports drinks and gels and whatever, and not need to have absolutely maximal muscle glycogen levels. If you're a race car driver, maybe it's different because you're sat down, not weight bearing, and wanting more muscle glycogen, maybe for being able to use glycogenolysis to supply blood glucose to the body for use in your brain. Who knows? But it's just there, and I will link to that study for you, which I didn't look up prior to this, so hopefully I've remembered it correctly. Anyway, where was I? We've done weight making. On to endurance. Now, endurance, I had lots of questions. I'm just looking where. Lots of questions around, you know, we know for muscle building and this, that, and the other, it's good. Can it help with endurance performance? And it's less studied and it's less likely to have a profound effect. But there's a couple of interesting things I wanted to point out. One, which is super interesting, and I'll link you to this study. I don't have the specifics written down here. But it's... No, it doesn't matter. I'll link you to the author and study and everything in the show notes on martin-macdonald.com/EP, whatever this will be, 30-something? Don't know. But you'll be able to look and go there and find all of the references and cool stuff if you want to read more. So, exercise in the heat seems to benefit from creatine supplementation. And it's really, really interesting. Essentially, they've done studies, and I remember seeing some of these when I was at university. Literally, you know, you put someone in a bike and in a lab, and you jack up the temperature so that it's just disgustingly hot. And I don't know if I've ever mentioned this anywhere else before, but I once, prior to the Brazil World Cup, Lucozade or whoever it was, Ribena, I don't know, the people who owned it at the time. But yeah, essentially Lucozade invited myself and several other academics down to London, and they'd bought this warehouse and basically made it the environment of Brazil inside. And then you played football in this the exact humidity and the temperature it would be in the heat. It was so cool. I love heat and sun and sweating and, you know, loads of... I loved it. You know, it just sort of... I think maybe some... Just feel a bit... Just loosens me up. I like whenever we go away with the staff team and stuff, and we train in gyms, like in Egypt, it was like super hot. I was like, oh, this is lovely. And Billy's dying. He's like, I can't train. This is horrible. And I'm like, oh, I love it. I put heaters on in the gym. And, you know, most people air condition their gyms. I like putting heaters on in our staff gym, MNU gym. Anyway, so we played football in that, sweating like crazy. It was super cool. Anyway, so at university, I would see people doing these cycling tests in like 30-degree heat. And, you know, like decent, if you know anything about exercise tests, like 60%+ VO2 max, just going and going, sweating buckets, horrific. And actually, I'm trying to think, I never got to do this, unfortunately, at uni. You know, maybe I would have learned more about myself. But rectal thermometers. But you're in a... I mean, I don't know if they can still do this. Probably. Hopefully the world hasn't got so stupid that they can't do this. But you literally were given a tub of Vaseline. I remember the guy in my group, Kareem, who did it. He was a joker, and you know, lots of people were sort of embarrassed about it. And I would have been. I was very repressed back then before I found out. I stopped repressing myself. And but you literally are given this rectal thermometer, which is you know, more than a meter long. And there's like a mark on it, and you go in and you lube it up and you stick up your bum. And then you come back into the classroom with it like hanging out of your trousers at the top so people can take. And then you're there, sat on the bike, having your rectal temperature measured as you do these different tests. And this is in a lab class, you know, like 30 of us. Yeah, a bit sad I didn't get picked now. But anyway, anyway, this creatine. Sorry, I'm getting off topic. Creatine and exercise in the heat. The reason, I don't know what I'm talking about now, but rectal temperature is one of the things that if we get an increase in core body temperature, it impacts the way our enzymes in our wet body, and it leads to fatigue. And by taking creatine, they do these tests, and you get these reduced or improved responses to this super, super difficult kind of exercise. Exercise in high temperatures at very high levels, and you get your heart rate tends to increase more, and you obviously sweat more, and your core body temperature goes up, which impacts, and you fatigue more. And creatine improves those reduced heart rate, reduced sweat rate, reduced rectal temperature, or a reduction in the increase. And it's kind of a little bit difficult to understand why in some elements, but some of the other research that you can draw from inferences from different research, like lactate threshold. There's another study in rowers. I'll link you to the study in rowers because it's quite a cool one. But and I'm trying to think, actually, that the study I was talking about there, the exercise in the heat, I think they actually showed that was one of the studies where they looked at responders to creatine, and those who responded most, so one thing I will say, I talked about inferences and why it might be happening. Intracellular water, the water inside the muscle, you're basically hyper and hypo. Hyper is a lot, hypo, you know, hypoglycemia, hypothermia being really cold, hyperthermia being really hot, hyperhydration, having more water in your body. So with creatine, we have more water in our body, so therefore that might be something that is improving our ability to tolerate this exercise in the heat. And those who responded most to the creatine supplementation had increased time to exhaustion, I think it's sometimes difficult when you've read so many studies to remember which one was which, but I think increased time to exhaustion at this you know, pretty high intensity in very hot conditions. Anyway, the study in rowers, they found that they had improved their lactate threshold, and they were able to in an all out anaerobic performance test were able to row for longer with creatine supplementation. And so you get this idea that, okay, it's not, you know, probably not helping marathon runners, but it's not just helping sprints, it's not just helping you know, bench press. Its benefits are, you know, not seconds but maybe minutes. But, you know, but even then, like I said, that endurance in the heat test, I think we were closer to an hour than, you know, several minutes improving in performance. So again, it's an interesting one, isn't it? Right, so in terms of endurance performance, I think I've covered, there's not a lot of research, just to say that. And if you're thinking about, you know, for running and for triathlon, you always need to weigh up the pros and cons of the increase in weight. But it might just help with your overall training. And if weight isn't a big factor for you, and if your weight doesn't increase that much, it still might be providing you with some benefits. Okay. Last thing I want to cover, because there was this question that came in that said, should you stop taking creatine if injured? And there was a few different ones like that. And so I just wanted to talk about really interesting research on limb immobilization. And since I last spoke about this, whenever this may have been, maybe 2015, 16, recording some content for Mat Nutrition Uni, you know what, actually? I was coming up with topic titles for some future episodes, and I'm going to do you a series on metabolism, because I get so many questions, different questions around metabolism, and, you know, slow metabolism, differences in metabolism based on, you know, different people, their genetics, slowing metabolism with diet or different macronutrients, just loads of stuff about metabolism, even stuff like, you know, aggressive dieting stuff, but yo-yo dieting and metabolism, reverse dieting and how it affects metabolism, metabolic adaptation with diets, that's your metabolism. So I'm going to do you a load on that. And so I was coming up with these and was thinking about time frames of when I needed to just, I want to plan it well. One of the things, just to say this, I know I said I was going to try and not put too much pressure on myself. But I just think for the longevity of the podcast, I want to at least, you know, it's not a full literature review. I'm not doing like a whole episode on like individual studies and going really, really sciencey and like, you know, there's other amazing podcasts for really delving, you know, doing long form. Lots of people saying, can you do longer episodes? And they're already too long. You know, when they go over 15 minutes, I'm like, that's too long. Because I chat and go off on stupid tangents about sticking thermometers up your bum. But, you know, like, I always want to praise Sigma Nutrition Podcast. If any of you are looking for more content, what Danny does there is just phenomenal. I'm not a podcast listener, but if I ever do listen to just need something on, Danny is my go-to. Sigma Nutrition Podcast. Where was I? Limb immobilization. No, I don't know why I just suddenly said this. Yeah, delivering content on creatine and limb immobilization and MNU. Anyway, I'm going to do it. I just suddenly thought that I didn't think this yesterday. I'm going to do an episode on MNU. Just, I get so many questions about MNU, and I thought, you know what? What better way than just to answer 5-10 questions on Mat Nutrition Uni and stuff around that. Anyway, sorry for the tangent. Limb immobilization. When I last did this, there wasn't a huge amount of research, and there still isn't. I had just a little flick, as I'm sure some of you have done at times. And there was a couple of new studies that I hadn't seen. And the research in this area is equivocal. So what we're talking about here is limb immobilization and generally in a cast. So someone breaks their arm, whatever. But in the studies, they don't break the subject's arms before anyone starts freaking them out about cruelty. You know, people get upset when you talk about overfeeding women. Imagine I said, oh, yeah, they took these female subjects and broke their arms. Still in the name of science. I think you'd have some serious Karens on you then, wouldn't you? And Karens and Callums, we call them now. I don't know if you know that. If you're not another nutrition podcast regular, that's what we do. Karens and Callums are those people. But they basically get subjects and they immobilize their limb, whether that's their arm or their leg, for a week or two. And they supplement them with creatine, and then they see whether muscle function changes, whether muscle size, muscle strength, muscle endurance changes. And obviously with immobilization, it does. Now, something I'm going to say is just, people say, should I come off it when I'm injured? No, almost certainly not. No matter what the research says, which it is middling at the minute, the data is equivocal. Unequivocal is like, we're very sure it always shows the same thing, and it doesn't seem to show the same thing. There's no reason to come off it. And if there's any benefit, you're going to lose that possible benefit. Now, what seems to be interesting, you know, upper versus lower limb and the benefits of creatine, similar to elsewhere, it seems that it might benefit the reduction in elbow flexor, your guns, and elbow extensor, your tris, And it might be that it helps the reduction, it attenuates the loss, it reduces the loss in your muscle, in your arms, if you're in a cast. Whereas in your legs, it doesn't seem to be having the same effect. It's not as helpful, which is just, we don't know why. I don't know why. I've got some ideas in my mind of why it might be to do with the use of those parts of the body. But realistically, even if we don't know if it helps lower limbs, I still wouldn't stop taking it. And this is complete immobilization in a cast. Sometimes people are, you know, I've pulled my hamstring, I'm not running, I can't, you know, I'm on a crutch because I've twisted my ankle. I wouldn't say to stop taking creatine. No, it's, and then the final thing, and I'll link you to this, to a couple of these studies actually, just so you can see them, you can see what it's like if any of you want to geek out on the methods. But we then see that when the cast is taken off and the placebo group and the creatine group then recover, go into a rehab situation, any of you physios out there, in a rehab situation, creatine is dramatically, significantly impacting the improvements as a result of a rehab program. Ergo, take creatine when you're rehabbing, definitely. Okay. There were some questions about, you know, young athletes taking creatine, and I think I'm going to talk about children in one of the concerns podcast. But I've already spoken to you about this. If you've got, you know, fetuses being given creatine, and you've got, you know, given via the placenta and the mother. And you've got children in traumatic brain injury situations being given it with no ill effects, and you've got, you know, elderly and whatever. Really, there's no reason to believe that a relative dose based on body weight in adolescents is going to cause any harm. So can a, you know, I've got a 16-year-old who plays rugby. And then there's this other thing of, well, actually, if you're letting your child play a sport where they're getting smacked in the head, I think the least of your worries is their creatine supplementation, and actually it might be, like I said about this preliminary research we've got in concussion, actually you might be doing them a disservice if you stop them taking it. But then you've got this situation of, okay, well, I've got a 14-year-old weightlifter, can they take it? It's up to you as a parent, but if you're asked, you know, if you go and ask your doctor and the doctor goes, I've got no idea about creatine, I've never been trained in it. It's as long as you're taking it based on body weight, go to the dosing episode, there's no evidence, no reason for me to say you definitely should stay away from the use of it. Okay, I think that's it. I hope you've enjoyed it. I feel like that's longer than I wanted it to be, but hopefully there's been some entertainment, some education, and some helpfulness within there for you. As always, much love. Your reviews, which I know thousands of you haven't left despite listening every week. I see you. I see your numbers. I see the numbers of you listening. Thousands. How many reviews are there? Not thousands. Come on. Do me a favor, please, my lovelies. Until next time, much love. Goodbye.